Was there a seismic moment in your life where you made a break for it, made a definitive decision to move your life in a different direction? Maybe it was a person you left behind, or a place, or maybe a mindset. Either way, what was it like for you making that split? Let us know on our Facebook page. That's a question my next two guests have grappled with in a new collection of essays called Split: True Stories of Leaving, Loss, and New Beginnings. Alice Pung is a writer and one of the contributors to Split, and Lee Kaufman is also a writer who was both a contributor and the editor for the book. Alice, Lee, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure. Lee, the idea of an anthology on this theme was first mooted by your publisher, but you leapt up and said yes. What was it that appealed to you so much?
Oh, yeah. When Jane Carey, who is the Ventura's owner, came and told me about her idea, she didn't just say to me, let's do a book about endings. She said, she already had a title. She said, let's call it Split. And I just thought, wow, this is just amazing, because Split is not any ending. It's a dramatic ending. It felt to me like something where, you know, something bloody, something torn, something really sort of memorable. And I think most great literature really based on endings like this. I mean, even if you think about a book like Cherry Orchard, that begins with the Chekhov's play, that begins with the loss of a state, or imminent loss of a state. And I think any writer really would have loved to sort of write something like this. And when I started approaching writers I love and asking them if they would contribute an essay, really, I had maybe one or two. No, everybody else, even the anthologies, don't pay a lot of money. But and the writers I approached, they really successful and very busy. But almost everyone was very excited. In fact, Alice sent me a wonderful email where she expressed herself very poetically about how much this kind of ending's in her.
Yes, there was capital letters, there were exclamation marks. And Alice, I think you said this beautiful quote. It's like little bullet holes in the soul, shrapnel and all, rustling inside. What was it that shouted out to you that you wanted to do this story?
Oh, well, I had a number of stories. When you think of Split, you know, you have a number of splits in your lifetime. But what really appealed to me was Lee's brief was that the split didn't have to have a neat resolution. It could be messy. It didn't have to end. And you didn't have to be a better person for the split.
That was really interesting that, Lee, you wrote that in your introduction, that there's this dominance of adversity overcome and ruptures resolved and closure. What do you feel we're missing out on if those are the only stories we hear?
I think it's a little bit like with this idea of happiness, that we have positive psychology is really, really in vogue at the moment, which is, there's nothing wrong, of course, about wanting to be happy and trying to be happy, but the pressure of being happy all the time is really hard. And I think it can make people actually unhappy. And I think it's the same with endings. People sort of expect that if you tell them a difficult story, it's almost like you have to soothe your listeners and at the end tell them that you've learned something, that you are better now. So you have to take care of others as opposed to expressing difficult stuff that actually happened to you, and maybe that's all you need to do is to express. But also, the main thing that really was important to me, I wanted not to make a book which will be like what we call social realism in the Soviet Union, where I was born. Social realism was the prevalent style of writing, and that means that you would write about how things should be as opposed to how they were. I wanted a book that represented how life actually is and all its shades, and the reality is that some endings make us smarter, good for us, we learn something from them, and other endings we don't. It's a bit like with the book I recently wrote, Imperfect, where I talked about my struggle with my body image. And often when I speak about it, people always ask me, so how do you feel about now? And you accept yourself completely, aren't you? And it's not always like that, so neat.
Yeah, if literature is an axe for the frozen sea, you've got a broken sea at the end of it, haven't you?
Kafka always good to you.
In the book, Ramona Koval quotes Ovid. She says, be patient and tough. One day this pain will be useful to you. Mm-hmm. It is a very human thing, isn't it, to look for the usefulness of pain, to work out what you are going to glean from this difficulty.
It's a very writerly thing, especially, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. And I think a lot of these writers.
It's our consolation.
Yeah. I found a lot of consolation in these stories, as well as the aftermath of the frozen sea. Lee, when we think about splits, we might automatically think of relationship splits, but there's a lot of diversity in this book. Was that a deliberate decision to seek that diversity out?
Absolutely, yes. So when Jane sort of, once again, I'm going back to Jane, when she suggested this book, I also immediately thought, oh, shall we do a book about romantic relationship? And I thought, no, that's not interesting. I mean, it's fantastic. And in fact, quite a few contributors wrote about end of romantic relationships, but it was really interesting to explore this theme much broader. And so we ended up with having essays on leaving a country or leaving a city or leaving a certain part of yourself. So for example, Graham Simpson, whose essay opens the book, he writes about, he sort of speculates that perhaps he has had certain autistic characteristics, which he managed to leave behind. And I really love Alice's take on the topic. I mean, that was a very unique take as well, where Alice writes about leaving her family's working class and becoming the first person in her family to go to university.
Well, and Alice, could you tell us about that, the particular place that you wrote about leaving behind, this electrical shop in Footscray in Melbourne's inner west? What was it like there?
So it was a psychologically leaving it behind because it's still there and it's still thriving. So my dad has this electrical appliance store. It's a Better Electrical, but back then it was a Retrovision. It was where top brands cost less. That was a slogan. And so... it was at the centre of Footscray down Barclay Street, and Barclay Street is full of immigrants, and immigrants don't usually, they have a different take on Australian culture. So Barclay Street was featured in the film Romper Stomper, which my dad was really proud about. He said, you know, that's the street our shop is on. And when the first Chemist Warehouse opened in Footscray, the owners wrote a scene on a current affair, not realising a current affair were doing a really serious, why is this druggy suburb having a first Chemist Warehouse there? So it's a very literal, earnest suburb. And I remember when I got to university, I thought, oh, yes, I'm leaving all this behind. You know, my friends have libraries in their houses. They shop down little strip malls that look nothing like this. And I used to take them on tours of Footscray. And there's this wonderful line in Dickens' Great Expectations where Pip goes back and he says, I'm going to, you know, give them gallons of condescension. And that's how I felt when I was 18, 19 years old. As an adult, I look back and thought, oh, gosh, I was pretty an awful person then. But back then, you know, I used to give my uni friends tours of this suburb and make fun of this is so sad, the most beautiful things poor people could afford were in the gift shops, you know, fluorescent orange Jesus and things like that, plastic flowers. Yeah.
But one of the most powerful things for me about your piece was how you showed the layers of meaning around that shop for you and for your mother and your father. Can you tell us a little bit about what it meant to your father and then what it meant to your mother in a different way?
Oh, for my father, with a lot of immigrant men who come to a new country, they're the ones who go out into the world. That's exactly what my father did. He started this Retrovision store when everyone else was starting a grocery store. And so it was his life. It still is. He's in his 70s. He's still at this shop. You know, it's given him meaning and a sense of purpose. For my mother, however, my mother's 10 years younger, and as part of ethnic cleansing in Cambodia, they closed down all the Chinese schools when she was in grade one or grade two. So she's not that literate in her first language, not literate in her second in English. She can't read or write or speak very well. So she used to say to me, you've got to go into this shop. You've got to stand at the front counter and be the manager's daughter, you know, because I can't be there. They won't let me in there. I can't speak a word. I just, you know, make them look bad. So that was really sad. For about a decade and a half.
And yeah. Then for you had these competing kind of pulls on you too. You were caught up in your parents' meanings of the shop, but then also you started to discover your own desires and repulsions in relation to it too.
Yeah, because friends at that age as well in their teens were getting retail jobs and they bagged their retail jobs. Oh, it's a crappy McDonald's job. I work at Big W. Whereas my parents were saying, it's a sense of pride to stand at this counter selling electrical appliances. So that was the, you know, the struggle I grappled with at school.
And so you as part of growing up or forming your identity, you moved away from the shop. How hard was that to do?
Oh, it was really hard. I didn't exactly move away until I was about 25. And that's when my first book was published. And my dad was really proud, so he stuck pictures all over the wall of his shop. But then my life started to drift further and further apart from working every Saturday at Retrovision, even when I had a full-time job because I graduated, became a lawyer, but every Saturday I'd go back. And, I think as my weekends became busier with book commitments, the more I drifted apart. So it wasn't until I was about 27 that my, yeah.
What's it like going back now?
Oh, it's makes me quite happy. I'm there at least once a week. I bring my kids there. My mum babysits my sons and she takes them there every Wednesday because it's like a big playground for a four-year-old with 10 televisions at the same time and, you know, vacuum cleaners. Yeah.
And I remember you writing that you when you left the shop and all it represented, you weren't sure if you were going to like this new person that you were becoming. Do you look back now with a bit more, a different feeling about that person now?
I guess so. I guess you're more sympathetic to your younger self. You see the silly mistakes. You see the ego that a 20-year-old has, the sense of insecurity that fuels this ego as well.
And Lee, let's talk about your piece too, because you left a person and a city. Tell us first how intense Tel Aviv was and what bound you to it for so long.
Well, Tel Aviv was and has been probably one of my greatest loves, and I really mean it. So I came to Israel. I migrated to Israel from Russia when I was 12, and my parents, being, you know, migrants and everything, we ended up living in this really sort of interesting place where it was mostly consistent of beauty queens, criminals, and and footballers. the high culture what we had is Rambo movies, the Sylvester Stallone movies in the cinemas. And I was this bookish child, very, very shy, very, very bizarrely well-read in classics. I mean, I had my first attempt at Tolstoy when I was 8 years old. So I did read the War and Peace, but, you know, I mostly skipped the war part. So for me, living in Ashdod, where we kind of ended up, was really dispiriting. I mean, even my history teacher had troubles differentiating between first and second wars. So so Tel Aviv, which is, Tel Aviv in Israel is like New York in America. It's a bubble. It's a mythical city. It's much more than just a city. And Tel Aviv was for me like a cultural mecca, an intellectual mecca. And I remember before I sort of could move there, I moved there as soon as I could at 19, actually in my own peril, because I was still doing my compulsory army service and we were not allowed as soldiers to work. But I went and worked illegally at nighttime and didn't sleep. So I would go out during the day to the army, and then at night I would be working as a bartender just so that I could keep a rental room in a very kind of dirty apartment. So for me, Tel Aviv was like a place where I saw European cinema for the first time, and I just found myself.
And you ended up in this volatile and ultimately dangerous relationship and had to leave that. What was it like having to simultaneously leave the person and the city?
So you were asking Alice before an interesting question about how she thinks about her younger self now. In retrospect, and it's very interesting to think about your past, which is what really, so part of why I really love writing memoir. And I understand now that I actually, as dangerous as that relationship was, I mean, I could have been potentially killed at the end. It probably was useful as well, because I have a tendency to overstay in my love affairs, whether it's with cities, because Tel Aviv is not the first city I loved. I love Melbourne very much now, but I do have tendencies to overstay in my relationships. And so I lived in Tel Aviv for 7 years, and the last 2 or 3 years, it was time for me to move on. But because great passions, they sort of burn you out as well. But I got a lot from that city, but time came and I needed to leave. And I just could not make a decision. And that's partly what was interesting for me in this, my exploration of the ending. How do you decide? How do you actually manage to make an ending? And unfortunately, at that time, I was 26 at that time, I actually needed a really bad relationship, a really abusive relationship, to get the courage, because I just had to flee basically from the that men, and that actually helped me in retrospect to flee from the city also.
It's nothing like a plane ticket to say this is actually an ending, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
I love how Mifanri Jones writes about her long-term marriage breakup and the importance of story and how we react to splits. It's some narrative tropes are going to help you cope and understand and some are not. And she kind of uses and discards the fairy tale ones. Are there any ways of writing yourself that have stayed with either of you throughout this process?
Way of writing myself.
Yeah. Do you write yourself differently now?
So look, I don't think this particular essay changed a lot of how I write myself, because I've always been a writer who writes about herself. But I think every younger self of mine that I write, I need a different voice. And I think in this particular essay, I actually really for the first time, not for the first time, but one of a few times when I actually really managed to relieve emotionally both the danger that I had in Tel Aviv, but also the eros of that experience. And I hope to carry it into my next works too.
And Alice, do you write yourself, your life differently these days?
Oh, well, I was so glad Lee asked me to write for Split, because it was a story I had actually written before in my first book, only a couple of pages, you know, when I was about 17 years old. I had a bit of a nervous breakdown. And so it's in my first book that a lot of high school students are familiar with. And this gave me a chance to go deeper into it. And especially to explore my parents' stories, especially my mother's story as a woman who was literally lacking in words in this new country. So I wrote the same story, but it turned out completely different.
That's really interesting, isn't it, when the passage of time reveals a few more layers. I'm so glad you were able to share those layers with us. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Hilary. Thank you.
Alice Pung is one of the contributors to the anthology that Lee Kaufman both contributed to and edited. It's called Split, and it's out now. This is Life Matters on RN.